Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in again this week. On this week's two podcasts, I have a very special guest joining me. Two-time Republican presidential candidate, Dr. Ron Paul, will be joining me on this week's podcast. Terrific to have him on the program. I know you're going to enjoy the conversation that I had with him as well as the insights that he offered. Also on today's program, I'll be talking about the Federal Reserve, and I'll be talking about the U.S. Constitution and what it says about money. And every time the U.S. has slipped away from the very strict guidance that's offered in the Constitution relating to money, there has been trouble. Also, on this week's podcast, on the second podcast this week, I'll be talking about economic winter season symptoms. I'll be picking up where I left off last week. Talk about some growing evidence that the economic winter season is about to intensify, and I will give you my opinion as to some strategies you might consider using to protect yourself as well. I have the great pleasure of welcoming to the Everything Financial Radio program Congressman Ron Paul, former candidate for the U.S. presidency. Congressman Paul's articles can be accessed at ronpaulinstitute.org. Also, Dr. Paul has a daily program available at ronpaullibertyreport.com. And Dr. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be with you.
Dr. Paul, I read with great interest your recent article titled "Congress Fiddles While the Economy Burns," and I want to give the listeners just a little bit of a quote from that article. You wrote, "Congressional war hawks ignore how America's hyper-interventionist foreign policy feeds the growing rebellion against the dollar's world reserve currency status. Of course, the main reason many are seeking an alternative to the dollar is they're concerned that unless Congress stops creating and the Federal Reserve stops monetizing massive deficits, the U.S. will experience a Greek-like economic crisis." So my question for you, Dr. Paul, is if current monetary policy continues, what does America's future look like in your view?
Well, I think it looks bleak, and I don't believe that we're going to reverse that gradually and deliberately and sensibly. I think that we're sort of locked in it, like we're addicted. The world is addicted to dollars, and we're addicted to it. Even as we speak, they talk about the tremendous effect it might have on our economy if the Federal Reserve raises the interest rate 0.25%, as if this could be the end of the economy. It is so out of context of what a free market should be, but the fact that we've been able to have a reserve currency of the world means that we have been able to export our inflation, and we can dominate the world militarily because the devaluation of the dollar is much slower if people take them up. For instance, if we print a lot of money and circulate it here, but we buy our goods from China, a lot of Americans get mad at that. Why do we buy China? Well, in a way, they do us a tremendous favor. They take our paper money, and then they buy our treasury bills, so they finance our extravagance. They're going to finally get fed up with being the victims of our dollarization. At the same time, they're going to get fed up with us in the foreign intervention, which is part of that article, is that we get involved, and we get involved in places like Iraq and turn that country over to the Iranians, and then we get into more trouble, and people want to go and help China. We aggravate the Russians. So the move now and the speculation is who will, which country will replace it in the East, the Far East. China, in spite of their difficulties with their stock market, they still are a creditor, a creditor nation. They have a lot of money in the bank, and they have been buying gold. So I think our days are numbered, but that doesn't mean that next week or next month you're going to see the final conclusion. But I think the crack is there, and there's a history is on our side that paper money, fiat money, never lasts, it never endures forever, where if you had a gold coin, it's 2,000 years old, it still has the same purchasing power back then. Paper is exactly the opposite. But we're moving into the age where most people are recognizing this challenge on the dollar, and I think it's a very, very serious issue that we have to deal with.
You know, Dr. Paul, given that the Federal Reserve operates largely in secret, minutes of the meetings aren't released until 5 years after the meeting takes place, auditing the Fed seems like a commonsensical thing to do, and for years you've advocated an audit the Federal Reserve bill. Explain to our listeners why this is important, and secondly, why has this idea not gained more traction in Washington?
Well, mainly because the powerful forces are opposed to it. And sometimes if you build momentum for an audit, like I think we had, you know, in the presidential races and after the crisis, they realized that and they had to, you know, acknowledge it. So some now who say, yes, we have more surveillance of the Federal Reserve. There's more transparency than ever before. But they generally come in and they talk about reforms, but they're not real reforms. So you will see some people agitating because there's a public awareness now like it has never been before because of the seriousness of our crisis. But those bills won't do much, and that's why I keep still, through an organization I have, the Campaign for Liberty, that's one of our projects, is to continue to educate people on why you need a thorough audit. And the thorough audit tells you the inside track on who gets bailed out and why they get bailed out and who's getting this money and all the churning, because we would know everything, and especially what they don't want us to know about are the international transactions. And they will throw tidbits about a little bit about what they bought and sold during the crisis, but they can hide trillions and trillions of dollars of transactions that we never get to know about.
Dr. Paul, I want to go back and talk about something you mentioned just a moment ago, and that is that at some point the rest of the world will look for and ultimately probably find a viable alternative to the U.S. dollar for a reserve currency. When that does occur, explain to our listeners how the lives of everyday Americans might be affected.
Well, the big thing will be that interest rates will go up, and it won't have, and Federal Reserve policy will not do anything about it. It'll be because there's been too many Treasury bills being dumped. The Chinese have already started selling, not significant enough to push interest rates up much, but I think the 30-year bond went up. Maybe they're selling those. But what would happen if they start to reject that, unrelated to Fed policy, interest rates would go up, which means that that would dampen the economy. The economy is going to get much weaker. But instead of prices going down, because everybody's convinced that if you have a weak economy, prices always goes down. Well, sometimes they do, but sometimes you have inflationary depressions. I mean, Zimbabwe had a very weak economy, and yet all the money in the world they won. Even in the 70s, we had a pretty good taste of that, and they didn't know what was going on. They said, the economists came on and said, oh, we have stagflation. Very weak economy, but prices are going up. So they can't control where the money goes. So they've inflated this currency tremendously in the last 7-8 years, but the planners are disappointed because it hasn't gone into stimulating industry and job creation and this sort of thing. But it went where they partially wanted to go. It went in to bail out Wall Street, bail out the stock market, and it kept the bond prices very, very high. So they've just created another bubble. They go from one bubble to another and pretend that the economy is perking along. At the same time, we have 94 million people that are unemployed, and the labor participation rate is under 63% at historic lows. So their policies aren't working. And you'll just see an exaggeration of that. But I think we're going to have a weaker economy with rising prices and no new investments. And I believe that the one side benefit will be that we won't be able to afford the kind of things that we do overseas, aggravating people. And this was more or less what happened to the Soviets in some way, because their economy was never as healthy as ours, and it finally collapsed, and their empire fell apart, and they had to leave Afghanistan. But we could have something along that lines where we will be forced to come back if people won't keep taking our dollars and keep loaning them back to us. But I'm sure not only the fact that we are in so many countries always participating in regime change, they also don't like the way we manipulate the currencies and put sanctions on people, and people will have ill feelings that have been harbored. But if they see that we're weakening, it sort of could be jumping on the bandwagon to come down hard on us, because where we stand today is our economy is a lot weaker than a lot of people pretend it is.
I want to go back to something, Dr. Paul, that you said just a moment ago, that the official unemployment rate is 5.1%, but the labor force participation rate is at nearly a 40-year low. If you were to calculate what the official unemployment rate is using maybe methodologies that that used to be used, what is closer to the real number, and how has this system of calculating the unemployment rate gotten so far out of whack?
Well, I think people want, the markets want to hear and respond to the lies. I think they know that, but they say, well, it's going to be an official announcement, 5.1, and the market's going to react, so they react hour to hour. But long term, I think these numbers of labor participation rates and how many people are unemployed are very, very important. And and that's where, you know, where the real problems are, because you know, the employment rate is not going up.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for our segment, this segment, rather. Our guest today is Dr. Ron Paul. You can read Dr. Paul's articles at ronpaulinstitute.org, and his daily program, Ron Paul Liberty Report, is available at ronpaullibertyreport.com. I'll continue my conversation with Dr. Ron Paul in the second podcast this week. In this segment, I want to talk about the Federal Reserve and money. Most of you are probably a lot more interested in money than the Federal Reserve, but it's important if you want to do the right things with your money, if you want to make the right decisions for your nest egg, that you understand how the Federal Reserve works and how money works. Now, if you go back and take a look at what the Constitution says about money, and we talked about this with Dr. Paul, Article 1 of the Constitution says, "The Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts." So we can conclude from this that the Constitution says that money has to be gold and silver. Yet today, as Dr. Paul pointed out, money is paper, not backed by anything tangible. U.S. dollars are now a fiat currency, which means dollars today are used in commerce and are money, be it by decree. The government says that they're money and use them as money. Now, we talk about, and I talk about in my book, New Retirement Rules, this currency money cycle that has existed historically. Seems that this cycle exists because human behavior is predictable and the collective behavior of groups of politicians is also predictable. Money starts out as something tangible, as it has been through most of history. Typically, historically speaking, this tangible stage of the currency money cycle finds money being gold and silver. Then we go to the second stage of the currency money cycle, where paper receipts are often used in place of the real money, but these paper receipts can be exchanged for a fixed amount of the real money of gold and silver. And a good example would be something called a silver certificate that was used in the United States through the late 1960s. If you had this silver certificate, on the certificate it said that the bearer of the receipt was entitled to receive the silver. So a $10 silver certificate entitled you to 10 silver dollars, which contains 7.2 ounces of silver. Then, often because of overspending, and often because politicians and policymakers have only three choices to deal with debt excesses and deficits, they can raise taxes, they can cut spending, or they can print money, we see this link between these paper receipts and this tangible money broken, and money or currency becomes fiat. 100% of the time, historically speaking, fiat currencies have failed, and when they do, typically, money now becomes gold and silver again. And this cycle has repeated itself many, many times throughout history. Well, the U.S. has strayed away from this constitutional mandate. And again, the Constitution says no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Well, the U.S. has strayed away from this constitutional mandate several times. The last time was in 1971 when then-President Richard Nixon ordered his Treasury Secretary, Mr. John Connolly, to temporarily suspend the redemptions of gold for dollars or dollars for gold. Well, that temporary suspension became permanent because those redemptions have never resumed. We saw prior to the Great Depression, Franklin Roosevelt ordered that all Americans sell their gold back to the government and the government could print money. Following the War of 1812, there were debts to be paid and the U.S. strayed from this mandate. Also during the Civil War, banking laws were changed to allow, again, money to be printed. My point is that each time this has happened, there has been trouble or the money printing has occurred as a result of the trouble, and the money printing has never solved a problem. Now, today's central bank, which has the power to print paper money, is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve oversees the Federal Reserve System, and even though it says federal in the title, the Federal Reserve is not an agency of the federal government. And many people don't know that. The Federal Reserve is an independent organization. It is essentially a partnership between the government and the private banks. Now, why would Congress want a relationship with an organization that is run by the banking elite? Well, let me give you my cynical opinion. In my mind, it's quite simple. The Federal Reserve can print money or create money and loan it to Congress. Why would Congress want this? You already know the answer to the question, overspending. Congress has three choices to balance the budget. They can raise taxes, cut spending, or print money. And back in 1913, the creation of the Federal Reserve gave the government a way to have created money virtually out of thin air. Now, the framers of the Constitution were pretty smart. In fact, Thomas Jefferson warned us against this very thing. Thomas Jefferson said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of the very continent their fathers conquered. Well, the Fed is essentially what Thomas Jefferson warned us against. The Fed has been printing money. And when it does, the currency is devalued. And if this money printing continues, your assets, we believe, may be at risk. We know this from studying history, and we know this from looking around the world today. Because when too much money is printed, eventually confidence in the currency is lost. And it can take a very, very long time, but the outcome is very predictable. We can look last decade at what happened in Zimbabwe. The country of Zimbabwe redenominated their currency three times last decade, and the last time they did, in 2009, they created a $100 trillion bill. And we're seeing now the beginning of the end today in the countries of Venezuela and Argentina. And the pattern, not surprisingly, is predictable. The pattern is always the same as Thomas Jefferson noted. Inflation followed by deflation. Or just deflation if money printing doesn't occur. Now let me explain this just in the time we have left as simply as I can. When you have easy money from money printing and make it easy for people to borrow money, they borrow money. If people borrow too much money, they get to a point that their debt cannot be paid. And if the debt can't be paid, then deflation sets in. Now, that may be a little bit confusing to you, but just think about this for a moment. Most money today is debt. Think about the assets on the balance sheet of a bank. Banks are in the business of loaning money, so most of their assets are the liability of someone else. They've loaned money to people for mortgages, for whatever, and their assets are solid assets as long as the people they've loaned money to can pay them back. If, however, the folks they've loaned money to for some reason cannot pay the bank back, money disappears from the financial system and assets disappear from the bank's balance sheet. That's what happened essentially in 2007 and 2008. Now, printing money can avoid deflation, but if money printing stops, deflation kicks in. If money printing continues to the extent that confidence in the currency is lost, inflation or hyperinflation occurs, and then a new currency typically ties to gold or silver, and that currency emerges, and the debt is then redenominated in the new currency, and then deflation sets in, as Thomas Jefferson warned us. If you'd like to learn more about these money cycles and learn more about how you might be affected, I would invite you to do one of two things, or even both if you're so inclined. You could request our free Investors Discovery Kit by visiting the website investingapproach.com. That Investors Discovery Kit contains a copy of my book, New Retirement Rules, as well as an educational CD and DVD. It's yours free by visiting investingapproach.com. You could also subscribe to my weekly Portfolio Watch newsletter that's delivered via email every Monday after market close. To just simply enroll and get a subscription to that newsletter, all you have to do is visit the website, yourretirementoutlook.com. The website, again, yourretirementoutlook.com. That's our first podcast of the week. Be sure to tune in again in a couple days when I'll continue my conversation with Dr. Ron Paul. That's all for now. Bye.